Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, the spooky edition. A combo pack episode of listener stories, of eerie encounters and family history, to my trek back up the mountain to explore more of the spooky history of the old mining towns of Colorado. Happy Halloween, guys. Strap in, cozy up, and get ready for stories that make you think, that make the hair on the back of your neck raise, and make you ponder, what else is really out there? And I'm joined today by the one and only Greg Hunter, who spearheaded the last episode.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We're here in our truck, recording live from the ranch.
Yeah, it started snowing, and we lost solar power because of that. So at least we have a truck that has an outlet in it. You know what I mean?
Well, we currently are hosting a number of people because we just had a big event. And so our house is full of all of our friends and family. And we got a hard freeze. It's going to be 20 degrees for 48 hours straight. So,
would you call it a hard freeze or also a snow? But, you know, whatever. Whatever you want to call it. Let's hope that we don't freeze in this truck because we can't have the engine on while we record. But guys, this isn't about us. This is about you guys and spooky stories to kind of creep you out at night. Happy Halloween, guys. Strap in, cozy up, and get ready for stories that make you think, that make the hair on the back of your neck raise, and make you ponder, what else is really out there? All right, so because we had people in town, I went back to, and it's not just that I like to gamble, guys. Like, we could go with that, but it is one of the creepier places I've ever been to. So, Cripple Creek. I've done some episodes on that. We've done Pearl Devere. We did we do like a Bob Womack that started? Like, we've covered like a lot
the
of
St. Nicholas Hotel.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That, yeah. We got that creepy. Yeah.
The graveyard.
Audio. Yep.
We went there with Minor Mike.
Yeah. So we've done a lot of Cripple Creek, but what we haven't done, and I might cover a little Cripple Creek on this episode because I did actually interview people that have had ghost experiences that work in the town of Cripple Creek, you know, working ghost situations. But the old mining town of Victor, Colorado is one of the more eerie places I've ever walked through. And when I say walked through, I literally mean like a brief 15 to 20 minute jaunt through the mostly abandoned town. Once a mining boom town, just 5 miles from Cripple Creek, the well-known, more famous sister mining town, where millionaires were made in a day. Millionaires were also made in Victor. But Victor is likely known now more for its hauntings and haunting appearance than the Wild West Gold Rush days. You see, the storied history of Victor is also hauntingly sad and cruel. The miners faced immeasurable cruelty from rich mine owners and the political figures at the time, which led to death, and death that likely caused people to stay stuck in between their death and the afterlife, stuck in a place where their dangerous job and dangerous wild lives keep them in a place they perished. If you walk down the empty, hollow streets of Victor, you'll encounter two hotels. One is the Victor Hotel, and the other is the Black Monarch, both famously haunted. I came here for this spooky episode, and I'm pretty brave, but by myself, I couldn't get the gumption to stay not only in essentially an abandoned town, though there are some wonderful businesses. I don't want to knock it down because these people deserve a shot to thrive, but I like access to restaurants to write and eat, and in the off season right now, it's hard to know when things are open. But truthfully, the real reason I wasn't sure I was prepared to stay in the notoriously famous hotels alone is that, I don't know, I was kind of scared. It actually seems the entire town is haunted by its past. Past miners and the ladies of the brothels and victims of foul play. They can't seem to leave a place where they struggled so hard to make their home and their fortunes. And a few incidents contributed to the lost souls of Victor, Colorado. When the silver boom crashed and made way for a gold boom, political figures and wealthy mine owners took advantage of the miners. So the miners went on strike. And it was an all-out war zone. A labor war not uncommon in Colorado mining history. Silver wasn't profitable anymore. Gold was the money ticket. And Governor Peabody declared martial law. And anyone who sympathized with the miners who were on strike, they were also punished. And Greg is going to tell you the story of the Victor, Colorado labor war that led to one of the most haunted towns I feel like I've ever walked in. And I actually had a friend, we went there, the first time we went there when it was just very brief, she kind of had a panic attack when she left there because there is something so looming and ominous about Victor, Colorado.
This is an article from the Morning Press dated to June 7th, 1904. The headline reads, "Most diabolical crime ever perpetrated in the history of Colorado mining troubles." Then goes on to say in bold text, "Cold-blooded murder of 13 non-union miners near Cripple Creek by use of an infernal machine. Riots follow at Victor, and many are killed and injured. Militia pours volleys into Union Hall. Clash at any moment." The article then reads, "Cripple Creek, Colorado, June 6th. One of the most diabolical deeds in the black records of crimes, which forms part of the mining history of this state, was committed when, by means of an infernal machine, 11 men were killed outright and 9 others terribly injured. Some of them fatally. All those killed and injured were non-union miners employed on the night shift of the Findlay mine. The men had quit work and were waiting for a suburban train on the Florence and Cripple Creek Railroad to take them to their homes in Cripple Creek and Victor. When the locomotive was within 100 feet of the depot, a charge of dynamite estimated at 300 pounds was set off underneath the platform on which the men were standing by pulling a wire at the Delmonico mine 400 feet away. The result was terrible. Heads, hands, legs, arms, and trunks of the bodies of the men were scattered all around. Blood covered everything. The depot platform was splintered, and the front end of the depot was demolished. The injured were taken to the Victor Hospital, and the mangled bodies of the dead, patched together as well as possible, were removed to the coroner's office. A meeting of the mine owners association has been called. Rewards aggregating many thousands of dollars will be offered for the apprehension of the criminals, and Governor Peabody will be petitioned to send troops to the district. Of the miners murdered, several are from the city, while some reside in Victor. Most of them have families, and the crime is enhanced for that reason, into the most stupendous disaster in the history of the district. 200 or 300 pounds of powder was exploded, probably by a revolver attached to a wire, which still remains leading out from the scene of the explosion. There is 75 yards of the wire, which was used to pull the trigger of the reservoir which fired the immediate charge of powder. The road into the wire was uncovered at 11 o'clock this morning by a construction gang of the Florence and Cripple Creek Railroad, which was sent to the scene of the wrecked depot. A large quantity of unrecognizable remains of human beings was also uncovered at the same time. Sheriff Burton Wilson and Underwood stood guard over the pile of debris from early morning in the hope that upon the arrival of the railroad workers, some definite clue to the nature of the machine might be discovered. Nothing was found, however, except the rear end of the wire which was used to explode the gun. The wire was discovered at daylight, running out alongside the switch which goes to the Delmonico mine. Attached to the end of the wire was a handle and a chair's leg. This was used to pull the fatal trigger, 75 yards of wire. Bloodhounds have been requisitioned from Trinidad Hammer Lake, and Cannon City. The wire is being carefully guarded, and no one is being permitted to walk along the spur of track along which it runs. It would seem like a futile attempt to apprehend the assassins who pulled the trigger. The trail would be lost after the end of the spur is reached. This is so near the town of Independence that innumerable persons have traversed the ground in that vicinity. It would seem that the only hope is for the arrest of every suspicious person in the district and forcing of such persons to provide alibis. The crime is such a terrible one that nearly all of the authorities are at sea for a theory to account for the identity of the murdered or murderers.
I wanted Greg to read that newspaper article because it seems like, you know, like a very early 1900s, like dramatic explanation of something that was legitimately dramatic. The government even hired mobsters to put people in a bullpen or take them out if they sympathized with the miners' strike. So the miners go on strike. They want more than $3 a day. And, you know, the silver boom or the silver crash basically had ruined their livelihood at that point. And no one was out for them. So they had to be out for themselves. So, yeah, they did some attacks themselves. But the government or the mobsters hired actually planted bombs and did terrible things to keep these miners silent. So it's just one story of how Victor, Cripple Creek, Independence, Florissant all became so haunted with people with lost souls. So one of the hotels that is there is the Black Monarch. And the new owner does seem to embrace and celebrate the horror of this hotel. I actually randomly, while I was in Cripple Creek, ran into this girl in the bathroom, and she just said, "Hey, how are you?" I was like, "Hey, how are you?" And she just asked me why I was there, and I was like, "Oh, well, I kind of want to like, I want to cover like the story of, you know, the Black Monarch Hotel, the Victor Hotel, Victor, you know, the hauntings around here." And she was like, "Oh, me and my mom just, you know, toured that hotel," and she put me in contact with the owner, but they were busy and out of town. Maybe I'll interview them at some point. But when they bought the place, it seems that they were told, like, "Oh, that place is super haunted. Like, I don't know if you want to go down that road." But the owners seemed to embrace and celebrate the horror of this hotel. And they doubled down and created a very unique experience there. They have themed rooms of famous serial killers like H.H. Holmes and Elizabeth Bathory. You know, there's things like Nikola Tesla. And if you're brave enough to stay in the hotel, you can experience a very unique retreat. It's very beautiful. It's a very unique place. It used to be a brothel. And a lot of people will see the ghost of a man who died in gunfight. And people have reported seeing unexplained things. And guests claim to have woken up to hear a woman laughing and men shouting, only to learn that they were alone in the hotel. Then there's the Victor Hotel, where a ghost named Eddie is said to haunt the halls. See, Eddie was in a rush to work one day and went onto the elevator, hit the button, and it was one of those like old birdcage elevators, and it didn't come up when he thought it did. And so he walked out, assuming the elevator would be there, and plunged to his death. Some people that have visited there recently at the Victor Hotel from May of 2023 stated on a website, "This is a nice hotel with character. I stayed 3 nights in May and was impressed. I had 2 experiences, hearing an older man's voice and a younger woman's voice in the lobby area. When I walked into the lobby, the voices stopped instantly. Nobody was there, and the same voices were heard in the second floor a few times. As soon as I got near the voices, it stopped every time. Always the same 2 voices. This is not something I wanted to encounter. In another experience, they said, in the elevator, an old miner's face was on the mirror looking at us. Then on the landing of the third floor steps, a woman walked through me. She was pleasant, but didn't mean harm, just wanted to know that she was there. She felt more like an angel than a ghost. You can see on the wall there, the fire was, and there was, You can see on the wall there, there was a fire and it was rebuilt, along with the fear that they must have felt. Because also the entire town of Victor basically, you know, perished in a fire, but they rebuilt it quickly. But yeah, it's just, you know, old haunting gold mining, silver mining town stories. And now we're going to go into a few Cripple Creek haunting stories and some interviews from locals that I spoke to there. So this is from Buffalo Billy's Casino, where I spoke to a worker that worked there. Really nice guy. But this story is something that was submitted on Legends of America, and it states, long before Buffalo Billy's became the casino that it is today, it was known as the Turf Club. Still, visitors can see the top of the historic building, the carved letters spelling out Turf Club, room 1896. Several exclusive men's clubs, including the Turf, lined the streets of the burgeoning city. It was during this time, for reasons unknown, that the six-year-old spirit of a young girl took up residence in the building and has remained there ever since. Known as Lily, the friendly little girl has sometimes been seen sitting on the stairs, cradling a rag doll in her arms, looking incredibly real. An employee once asked her if she was lost, to which Lily replied, "No, I'm not lost. I live here." When the employee left to get the security guard, the pair returned only to find the little girl gone. On another occasion, when a tourist was playing the slot machines, she lost track of her daughter. When she began to search, she found her perched on the staircase. By the way, a staircase which I looked at and I've been told that there's writings, you know, you'll hear. Perched on the staircase, asking her what she was doing. The young girl replied that she was playing with Lily. Lily evidently has an artistic side, as her drawings, numbers, and letters are often found in the hallway at the top of the staircase. Although the walls are scrubbed down, the drawings always reappear. According to the tales, Lily is also said to like balloons, but only in certain colors. For example, if a blue balloon is left for her, it will pop. However, if a purple balloon is left, it will begin to wander around the building on its own. Others have seen Lily peering from an upstairs window down to the street below.
Literally, we were just sitting there watching TV, and my dog started chasing a cat. We could hear the cat scurrying across the floor and meowing back and fighting the dog, but wasn't there.
That's so creepy.
At all. It was kind of creepy.
Then your mom worked at the Palace Hotel?
Yeah, she was over at the Palace when she was like 15, so that would have been mid-80s. And yeah, literally, she was a head of housekeeping, so she'd go through and check the rooms at the end of every night.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was the chocolate being taken off the bed or something out of the bathroom missing, there was always one thing different in every room. So after like 2 months of this, she literally just sat there and yelled at Kate, who's the ghost over there, and it all stopped.
Shit.
Yeah, it went on for a couple of months that she had these issues of just one random thing in every other room. Never
Weird.
The same thing.
Is Kate the one that they see in the window? People say they see her in the window?
Yeah.
I'm hoping to look back at my photos and find her.
Yeah, that's Kate. Kate's the one that haunts the palace.
Cool.
So.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. What's your name?
Michael.
Rachel. Nice to meet you, Rachel. Do you mind if you're aired on a podcast?
I don't care.
Okay.
And now to our first listener story. The subject line reads, "My ghost experiences and videos, haunted cabin, and girl followed by a demon." Hey, Seven Deadly Sinners. My name is Devin. I truly love listening to your podcast. I heard you were looking to hear about people's paranormal experiences and knew I had to reach out because I have many experiences and also have video proof I can send you. I do a lot of urban exploration, and my father owns a genuinely haunted house where a lot of disturbing things have happened, to the extent where I refused to sleep there for 3 years. Brief rundown of what follows. Father's haunted cabin, assaulted by ghost, girl followed by a ghost demon, haunted house with insane background, my dad's cabin. He purchased it around 2012, and since then, disturbing levels of paranormal activity have ensued. I'll detail them here. The cabin is over 200 years old, made from two different cabins. One was used by the railway workers for the Trans-Canada Railway, and the other is even older, used as a farmstead. The previous owner was named Anne, and she died of cancer in the house right before we moved in. Her kids live in town as well. My first experience there was at night when I was 16 years old. At this time, I never thought the cabin was haunted. I was sleeping in my room and I heard someone walking slowly up the wooden stairs and down the hallway right in front of my door.
Terrifying.
And just stay there and never move. But brushed it off as my dad. Then I went back to sleep and the blind spinner thing that opens and closes started swinging back and forth right above my head. And this woke me up. This kept happening every night. The blinds would swing and I would hear walking and creaking on the wooden floor and this slow gait. I slept there and it would always start at 3 a.m. like clockwork. Then another day, I was in the washroom and I was home alone and I heard footsteps, so I froze. No one was there, and I saw two shadows where feet would have been just standing behind the door from under the door crack. I was so scared I couldn't move, and it just stood there. I sat there for a while, for what felt like an eternity, frozen in fear.
How scary. Can you imagine that?
I can't.
Like, honestly, it's like Blue's paws under the door is very adorable, but seeing, like, two shadowy figures, like, under the door creak is, like, a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to hear, like, a disembodied voice or, you know, even the footsteps, but when you bring in the shadow play, because then you don't know, is it a ghost or is there actually someone on the other side of the door?
Yeah, it really, like, genuinely gives me chills. Did someone break in? Like, what's happening
here?
It's
like there's something removing the light. So, like, the shadow of the feet just takes it next level. It's like, terrifying. It's not just in your head.
Oh, it's terrifying.
Let's resume. So, he or she says, after maybe 5 minutes, that felt like 5 hours, I opened the door and there was nothing there. The blind swinging would happen almost every night. And I also started waking up to my nose having blood in it. That's weird.
Okay, is it just dry out, though? Because I've had a lot of bloody noses since it started getting cold here. But no, I'm not discounting you.
I never get bloody noses.
Okay, well.
Like, I've had, like, less than five in my whole life.
Oh, I've had, like, one a day for the last, like, 5 days.
I mean, you've had a lot of nose-related injuries.
Yeah, it's not my strong suit.
One day, I walked into my room, and my dad had just made the bed before I got there. And the duvet had two leg prints in it, as if someone was lying on my bed. At this point, I was thinking the ghosts were creepy, but relatively harmless. Other things would happen, like a cap for a water bottle would fly across the room, and my cousin's iPad also went flying.
What? This is terrifying.
This is a real poltergeist shit.
No, this is terrifying.
I would not stay in that house if these things were happening any longer. But anyhow, she goes on to say, this was until the ghost came into my room. I also don't just think it's one ghost, but I will go more into that later. So the events that made me leave for 3 years, good job, I'm smart move, started with me trying to sleep at night. Right around 3, I heard the footsteps start up, the stairs slowly walking up, and I was hoping it would just stop there. But it turned and headed down the hallway and stopped right in front of my door.
Oh my god, no. No.
I was so scared, I couldn't even shout. I had no voice. It was terrifying. I was hiding under my covers, and the steps went through my door and into my room. I have never been that scared before. The steps started walking towards my bed, and as they got close, I felt what felt like a hand go up my leg and then touch my privates.
Oh, thank you.
And as that happened, right after, I heard footsteps directly below me downstairs. It was like it went through me and into the main floor. I was freaking out, very upset, and I still couldn't talk because I was so scared. After I got the courage, I put on really loud music and ran over to my dad's room. No one believed me that night, and I was too ashamed to go into depth because of the sexual thing that happened to me. I was also only 16. After that, I told him I was ready to leave and couldn't sleep there anymore. I eventually was persuaded to go back, and it happened again, except it was worse this time. The second time, I was trying to sleep and I heard footsteps at the bottom of the stairs, except this time it did not sound like a person's feet. It was hard like a hoof, and it was uneven like a hobble.
God, this is scaring me a lot. Ooh. No, man, like my arms feel numb.
You got goosebumps.
No, I feel a little sick.
It came up the stairs and walked up to my door, but did not enter, and just paced back and forth. This was scarier than before because it didn't sound human. After that, I refused to go for 3 years. More happened I can go into depth, but that's why I left. Yeah, that takes it to another. Like, it's not like a human soul trapped in that house. It's like demonic. It's Baphomet-esque. It's.
But it also echoes with like all the whole like horse hoof thing. Hoofs. That I talk about. I talked about last episode. That just made me feel so scared. Like, and then, but it was pacing, like taunting.
Yeah, taunting.
Oh my God! My body actually feels, it's not just because it's cold out and the truck is off. I don't know. When I read that in the middle of the night a couple nights ago when compiling this episode, and I got really freaked out. Hearing you say it to me, like, I don't know, I feel kind of sick. Like, I feel like very...
Yeah, that took it to a whole new level of uneasy. It's one thing for things to go bump in the night, but when...
It's pacing,
hooves hobbling.
And pacing back and forth.
Like,
no thank you.
Yeah.
I'll see myself out, please, forever. Okay, so this one isn't like a spooky ghost story, but it is very on theme for the podcast. And this listener would like to remain anonymous. They write, "I'm a huge fan of your podcast. Thank you. And I just want to start off by saying thank you for the work you do. It means so much to me because of how it's helped me realize what kind of person my father is. Every new self-obsessed cult leader you talk about just shows more and more similarities to my dad. Every time I listen, I'm horrified by their actions. Same. But also feel so validated in my feelings for my father. And for that, I thank you so much. For the purposes of this email and for future endeavors, I will be remaining anonymous." I gotcha, kiddo. Content warnings. Physical, mental, and emotional abuse of a child, childhood sexual abuse, gaslighting, manipulation, death, grief, and the reading time is 10 minutes. Well, thank you. Very thorough. Wow. Do you want to work? Do you want to write for the podcast? I'm joking. But seriously. Send me an email. So where do I start? My father is a narcissist. Well, he may not have an official diagnosis. I'm pretty sure it would take a court order to get him to ever see a psych. He follows all the symptoms and signs of narcissistic personality disorder. The lack of empathy, aggression, the lying, the gaslighting, the feelings of superiority. Growing up with narcissistic parents can be absolutely hellish, and it has affected me so deeply as a person. As a child, I was stuck as the least favorite, at least to him. I will always be my mom's mini-me, And I'm sure he hated that. I was the younger, neurodivergent, temperamental girl who always seemed to be on his bad side. Before we stopped communicating, my father would regularly tell me the story of, quote, how he almost killed me when I was a child. And when I say child, I mean I couldn't have been older than 8. It was so early I can barely remember it, but it was in a childhood home I lived in from 5 to 12. I'm sorry, this is kind of sad. He tells me that day I had been, quote, lying about absolutely everything. This is common in his stories. He convinced my entire family that I was a compulsive liar. It was October, and I asked if it was dark outside at 8 p.m. You told me no. It was infuriating. One thing I do remember is him backing me into a corner in our kitchen, him shoving me backwards and my head hitting a cupboard. This is the only thing that stands out in my memory. No lead-up, no follow-up, just my father in my face and shoving me and pain in my head. Then he tells me, quote, then your brother came in and told me to stop. I asked him what he was going to do about it, and he told me he was going to protect his sister. You were lucky that day. I almost killed you, end quote. Oh, God, I'm really sorry.
Yeah, this is very sad.
It's very sad. I'm really sorry. Oh.
That's more than narcissism.
Yeah, I think.
I think that's...
I don't know. We're not psychologists, but that does seem bigger than... Yeah, I don't know. I feel I had read your email prior to this like a few times. And I wrote you back, and but rereading it live is, I'm really sorry. I'm just sorry that happened to you. But we're going to keep going, though, because I'm sure you're not alone in this. I'm sure many people have experienced, you know, shitty parents at certain points or shitty people. So, anywho, I don't know why he would tell me this at the time, but he always said it like it was a funny story. Like he was trying to remind me of the power he held over me. A story like this would always be paired with, quote, if you're ever trying to hurt me, to fight me, you better kill me, because if I get back up, you're fucked. Together, these stories solidified in my head that I would never get out of this. The one time I even tried to get out of it, I was unsuccessful. My parents split when I started middle school, and my mom moved into an apartment. There wasn't a specific visitation schedule, though, and the homes were close enough to each other that they would let me and my brother go back and forth whenever we wanted. We would just walk. I can't remember when, but at some point, I just got sick of my dad. I stayed at my mom's house the whole week, avoiding going back to my dad's as much as I could. Eventually, my brother noticed and called and asked me why I wasn't coming to Dad's. I told him I was sick of him hitting me, hurting me, yelling at me. Not long after, I got a call from my dad asking me, quote, why the fuck did you tell your brother that? When the hell have I ever laid a hand on you? Stop fucking lying and come home. Yet again, I was the liar. And I was alone. He never hurt my brother. He never hurt my mom. He only laid his hands on the house or me. So when I went back, and that was the last time I tried, the behavior continued. Rage, yelling, hitting, hating me, gaslighting, love bombing, manipulation, rinse, repeat. In my later teen years, things started to feel almost okay, though. But he was just ramping up to the love bombing to an amount I had never experienced. So as a confused teen, I just took this as finally loving me. Things changed, and I went to college. The summer after my freshman year, he and I got into an argument in the car, him making inappropriate comments about my partner and how they handle their anxiety. I'd had enough. I told him off, stormed out of the car, and that was it. The spark had caught in my heart, and I started fanning the flame with it all my might. My partner sat with me and helped me type out every single message I needed to send to him. Even my partner gave him a piece of their mind. They told him, quote, "The alcohol didn't make you a shitty dad. You're just like that." I ended up giving him an ultimatum. All I wanted was genuine and honest apology for him to take accountability for the awful things he had done to me and the way he abused me as a child. If I could get that, I would continue my relationship with him and we could work on it. His response, quote, "I'm sorry I ruined your fucking life." I knew this was all I would get. As you well know, a narcissist can do no wrong, so why would they ever admit to abusing someone? I was done. I told him not to contact me anymore, and he complied. It felt so good. I was finally standing up for myself. Good for you. Sorry, that was me. Good for you. I finally had a spine. This is where my healing journey started. Unfortunately, this is also where my worst memory came back of him sexually abusing me. When he came into my room reeking of alcohol and crawled into my bed and made me feel so small and confused and scared in that same childhood home. I couldn't have been more than 12. I'm fairly sure I was 10 or 11. Therapy has been a lot ever since then. I started in college through my school's medical faculties. I wish I could remember the name of the psych student I was seeing, but she was in training. Some 20-something woman who I went to another local school was getting her intern credits at the time. I want to thank her so bad. She helped me at the very beginning of this healing journey and gave me the first tools I would need to start to mend my heart and my mind. I'm sure she's a great therapist now, and I wish her all the success in the world. You're sweet. I've had a few unfortunate interactions with my father since we stopped talking. The first was almost exactly a year later at my brother's college graduation. He dressed as fancy as he could, maintaining that public appearance, and stayed civil through the whole ceremony, though he did complain about how long it was taking. Doesn't everyone know he's so busy? He sounds like a dick. Sorry. I mean, I'm sure you'd agree, but you made me laugh there. He has so many important things to do besides sit at his eldest kid's graduation. It wasn't until the rest of my group walked away that he approached me and asked, "So, are you happy without a father?" He didn't even let me finish my sentence before he stopped me and snapped back with one of his insults. "Is it yes or no question? Just to answer to it." "Yes, I'm doing great." And he didn't stick around to go to lunch like he had promised my brother he would. Like a true narcissist, someone threatened his sense of self and he needed to go on the defense. So he left, and my brother was left disappointed and alone with us. The next interaction, my favorite grandparent was dying. His mom. My grandma, who always treated me like her whole world. I was born around her birthday, and she always told me I was her gift that year. Every grandchild knew I was her favorite, and no one resented me for it. She lived down south and we were in the north, so it would be a lot of time and money to get me down there to see her. My father told me, my brother, that he would be willing to help either of us get down to see our grandparents. That way, we would have a right to see her before she passes, so just let him know. I didn't want to, but I messaged him. I kept it cold and clinical like I knew he would. I talked to mom and she's willing to help me and pay for the train to get down to see grandma. I was wondering what you would be willing to do to help out as well. I just want to be able to let mom know ASAP what she might need to give me. He writes, "If you'd like to call me and discuss how I can financially assist you in getting to see grandma, that's fine. We will also talk about other issues. There will never be a day when I assist redacted, that's the partner, with anything. I don't wish to discuss any other issues. This is only about me being able to see Grandma one last time before she dies. Redacted, ticket will be covered by Mom. You won't have to help him. Only me if you're willing to do so. The dad, so I get to be an ATM. That seems less than fair. If your mother pays for your ticket and you're the only one that goes, I will reimburse her some sort of the cost of your ticket. They say, what you do with your money is up to you, but my future husband is going to meet my grandmother before it's too late. The dad writes back, it has been nice chatting with you. Take care of yourself. He seems fun. I'm very sorry that you've been treated like that. Very sorry. Well, you said it for me. I was like, I'm very sorry you've been treated like that. But actually, your line, it was better said. You said, charming, isn't he? This was after he told my brother he would help me. No stipulations, no questions. Just that he'd help. Then he immediately changed his tune and held me from seeing my dying grandmother hostage in return for us reconciling. Nope, I didn't need his help. My mother paid for me and my partner, and we got to go see her for one single day. They finally met. This is how, oh, so nice. This is how I told my grandmother I was queer. She was so kind. Aww. And I miss her so much, and I wish I could have told her everything. But doing it on her deathbed wouldn't have been right. Go, Grandma. Since then, I have only seen him in passing, but I have gotten updates about his life from my brother and his wife. He works at a church now. Oh, great. Of course he does. With his girlfriend. They're elders at that church. My father has never been religious in my entire life. And while I understand that sometimes people find God later, that is not the case with him. Like every single girlfriend he's ever had, he adapts his personality to match whatever theirs is. That way, he can be secure and safe in the relationship, and they'll never know he's a piece of shit. He didn't even tell that girlfriend he had a daughter. She found out when they ran into one of my friends, and he had to explain how he knew her. I was disposable to him. Now that he had absolutely no control over me, I was useless. There was no point in acknowledging my existence. What scares me is the church thing. What I've learned from your podcast, Rachel, is that narcissists and churches don't mix well. There are innocent, unassuming people there, some in the most vulnerable point in their lives looking for guidance. There are children there. And he's an elder there. I'm just waiting to hear about a cult or a murder or anything to come out of that side of town. I've heard nothing yet, but I assure you, if you hear anything and it's public, I will come right back here and out him. You'll get to know his name. As for right now, I'm going to keep it to myself, as I want to write a memoir. This is only scratching the surface of horrible and inappropriate behaviors from him, but nothing is public. Nothing is legal. He's never been convicted for anything. I want to tell the world my story of healing and how I have come out of the abuse a better person than he could ever be. And it seems like you absolutely motherfucking are. But I know he would see it as libel. So I'm desperately trying to avoid a lawsuit and keeping everything under pseudonyms. Then she wrote, or they wrote, thank you so much for listening. Even if you don't end up reading this on the pod, it was cathartic for me. It was cathartic for all of us, I think. And a good start for working on my memoir. Keep doing what you're doing. Rachel, lift the voices up that can't be heard. Tell our stories. Show the world how common this all is. Show everyone going through something that this is not, they're not alone. That everything will be okay. It may not be soon, and it may take work. But the right people will stand with you and empower you, and you will be okay. Hey. I mean, you're a motherfucking hero. Thank you for this email. I hope that the listeners enjoyed it and resonated with it. I think anyone can. And yeah. Thank you. Greg, I'm sorry. I'm an emotional mess, but that was...
That's okay. That was heavy. I just had to tap out and let you read through it because it just angered me too much to listen to it. I mean, if someone is recounting times that they were almost going to kill you, that's not someone you should ever be around. Like, especially, I mean, I can't imagine a man saying, like, oh, if you're going to fight me, you better knock me down to where I can't get up. You know, like
to his child?
To his child, yeah. Like, that's something you say to your enemy. Like, in the boxing ring, you know? Like, how do you have that, I don't know, disposition with your child? I can't fathom that. Why would you want to intimidate your child?
Yeah.
Clearly, it's probably coming from a deep place of shame and...
Yeah, I feel like it must come from a deep place of shame and, like, perhaps generational trauma. I mean, you didn't explain in your email, but, you know, who knows what happened to him prior to becoming a parent, like what happened to him in his childhood. But that does not excuse...
Yeah, there's no excuse.
There's no excuse.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, something shameful he must have done to her, and he is taking out his own guilt and shame back on her.
Yeah.
For whatever terrible narcissistic reason.
Well, I'm very sorry you had to experience a narcissist like that, and it had to be within your own family. However, maybe you... Let's put a bright light on this. Maybe you helped listeners to recognize people they may encounter in the future or have encountered in their own lives that, you know, have treated them that way, and to know that, like, yeah, that's absolutely not okay. And maybe by sharing your story, and I think by sharing your story, you've probably helped people. And
that must be hard to remove someone of such stature, you know, in your immediate family from your life, your father, but yet your brother still talks to him. That's really difficult, but I think you did the right thing.
Yeah. And you're not alone. Hey, everyone's got crazy families, and I'm not trying to diminish it, and I'm sorry that happened to you, but... Thank you for sharing your story. And
one last thing on that note, I thought it was very honorable that she gave him the opportunity to just apologize. That's like, if you want to build a relationship, you know, we can wipe the slate clean if you just all out apologize. And he couldn't do that.
Yeah, it really does kind of show, you know,
cutting him out's the only option at that point.
Yeah. It shows who he is, but that's not who you are. And well, guys, thank you for listening. And Craig, thank you for being on the podcast and reading in your very deep, sultry voice.
You're welcome.
Happy Halloween. I hope it's spooky, but not too spooky. Well, actually, I hope it's a hell of a spook.
Yeah, we hope you encounter a ghost and then send us the story.
Oh my God, I want to hear more ghost stories. That that scampering one, reminded me of my London ghost story, and I was like, that noise will always stick with me. Always stick with me. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. I love you. Until next week, we'll be back to our original programming. Not spooky cryptids, but frankly, when you live on a ranch, it's kind of all you want to talk about, because it feels like anything can happen. All right. Love you guys. Bye.